all the people. Tonight is a very special topic. I'm very, very excited and grateful to all of these amazing teachers who have worked all day and had so much fun all day and then are here. They're going to share all kinds of wisdom and great information with y'all. Wisdom and, I don't like all the good things. But first, we're going to start with Cindy. She's got to be scoot off to be somewhere, but I definitely wanted you to all get to hear from her.
Just Cindy's hype man.
Cindy, if you will introduce yourself, tell us all how long you were in the school system, what all you did, give us some background, and then what we want to know from you is what is the most important thing, in your opinion, parents need to know.
Okay. Good evening. I'm Cindy Hipple. I was and still am an educator. I've been an educator for 35 years, and I'm retired currently. But I mentor at a nearby school, and I teach tribe girls, 5th and 6th graders. So I still have my little fingers in the pot, so to speak. I went to Baylor. Go Bears! And I'm certified in special education and gifted and talented, and then I have a master's in counseling. I taught for 24 years in the public schools, 5 different public schools, but mostly in Cy-Fair. And then my last 11 years, I was a counselor. But I think most of my experience came from having 2 sons. They are now 45 and 41, and we have 5 grandchildren. The most important things that I want to tell you are, well, first of all, I asked my girls in Sunday school Sunday morning, and they said the same things that I'm going to say. I'm going to say these in 3 L's. The first one is listen. One of the things that the girls said Sunday morning was they just don't listen. And I said, well, what do they do instead? And several things, but you've heard this before. My mom is always on her phone. Now, when you listen to your kid, it may come at a very inconvenient time. They never want to talk when you do. I'll never forget 2 o'clock on a Saturday morning. One of us had to stay home until everybody got home. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. Jay always came in and wanted to make queso and chips. And so it was my turn to be up. And I was exhausted. I'd taught all week. And I really didn't want to be up, but I was. And he started talking. And I just sat there. Now, one of the hardest things to do is to sit there and not say a word. If you have to bite your tongue, if you have to curl your tongue up into the roof of your mouth, don't say a word. Or if you have to say a word, this little word is one of the very best. Or, And then, don't say another word. But it was that early morning that we got the speech of, I'm so glad I grew up in this house. Now, he was in college. And what did I do? When he went to bed, I ran upstairs and woke Bill up. I mean, you will get that speech one of these days. But it'll be a while coming. The next L is let. Now, you are you, but they are themselves. Let them fail. Let them experience true consequences of their behavior. It's the desire of all of us to make sure our kids are successful, don't fail, don't get hurt. But when we let them and they face the consequences, they are experiencing the real world. And that is so hard because this is a dangerous world. But the more they can experience genuine, authentic successes, the better. They're not wonderful all the time. They're not the best all the time. They're not the fastest all the time. They are not the smartest all the time. And one of the important things that I learned as a counselor was, instead of saying, "I am so proud of you, I love you so much, you are so smart," say to them, "Aren't you proud of yourself?" Now, they know if they've done their best. But when you say that to them, it comes back on them. It makes them really think. They need to experience authentic, genuine success. And the last L is why you're here. You love your kids. We all love our kids. But love them enough to be real with them. And love them enough to let them be who they are. The goal of parenting really is, to me, not what your children achieve, but who they are and how they treat others. And that's what I have come to say.
If you don't have a daughter, like, go home tonight and work on that, because Cindy will be the hair tribe Sunday school teacher in 5th and 6th grade. And so, like, you need to have that happen because she's so amazing. Thank you, Cindy.
Well,
thank you. Like, really go home and work on that.
You have to go next.
Oh, hi. I know. Who wants to go next, y'all?
Margaret does. Margaret, tell us all about yourself.
I'm Margaret.
Any awards you won for being a teacher? Okay?
No, thank you. I've been teaching for 16 years. I did 10 years of resource special ed, so that's K through 5th grade, learning disabilities mostly. And then now I'm in my 6th year of PALS, which is 3-, 4-, and 5-year-old with more autism, emotionally disturbed, a little bit more severe behavior. And I also work, I'm the pre-K coordinator at our school, so I also work with pre-K. So tonight, because these ladies are upper, I'm going to just address more of the early childhood.
First grade. But you
I think that we as parents do a really good job of, when our kids go to school, they know their ABCs. They can count to 20, and that's kind of how we judge ourselves. We're like, yes, we have taught them their colors and their shapes. But I think the one missing thing that we as parents forget is that we need to teach them how to play with others and be with others. And that is a skill that we as teachers can't do as well because we have 20 kids in our room. But when you only have one or two kids at home, it's easier for you. So I tell my parents all the time, I'm like, when you're at home, you need to be almost kind of the mean kid when you're playing with your kids. So, like, if you're going to play cars, pick the car that you know your kid wants and talk them through those feelings. So take that car, and then they're going to be like, "What? No, I want that." And instead, you can be like, "Okay, well, how about we take turns? I'll play with it for 5 minutes, then you..." So talk them through some of the behaviors that you know are going to make them mad. And don't let your kid win every game. Beat them and make them understand what it feels like to lose and then what it feels like to be a great winner. So those kind of things, like teach them how to be a good friend and those kind of things. So I feel like we do really good with making sure they know their ABCs, but we also need to help them make sure that they know how to be a kind friend and play with others.
That's awesome.
All right. Y'all do yours.
Wait. we're just going to go back for one more second, Margaret. Was it all of HISD? All of the state of Texas? All of the United States? No. Tell us again.
The world.
I did win Elementary Teacher of the Year for HISD. In 2017, a long time ago.
Good job.
So That's so good, Margaret. Like, these aren't things I think of. But you're right.
I was just trying to think of something different.
It's really, really great. That's okay. Awesome. Thank you. Jordan, do you want to go next?
Sure.
We'll just kind of make our way up the age bracket.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Does that sound good? Mm-hmm. Do you like that? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. All the things about you, Jordan, and your
awesomeness. Hey, I'm Jordan, and I teach first grade. I have also taught kindergarten, and I have taught PE for a year and a half. And this is my 9th year in HISD, all at the same school. And I've taught many of your children how to ring chimes. It's a side job.
You're amazing at it.
Thank you. That's a fun game. And they do such a good job, and they work really hard.
Yeah.
Thank you. They're trying their hardest. Yeah. My turn.
Before you go on and talk about all the things that I've asked you to come here, but like, you're such a great hand type teacher, but tell them about how you do prayer. Like, that's my favorite part of what you do with your children.
What do I do with my children during prayer?
You have prayer time with them in the room, and you have the board, and you write the stuff down. Jordan. Okay, we'll come back to that. Go ahead.
Okay.
How natural it is to her.
What do I think is an important thing for parents to know? Yes. Well, I think...
like, when you go home at the end of the day, man, if only these parents knew.
Mel and I were talking about this. I think that the things that I wish that my parents knew are a little different than I think probably a lot of people here already know. But one thing that I wish that was more relevant this year in my class is I'm going to piggyback on what Cindy said about the let L. I think independence is one of the things that is kind of declining. I'm seeing a decline in independence over the past several years, and I just think that parents are worried about their kids not experiencing terrible things. Of course, nobody wants your precious angel to experience terrible things, and I don't really want them to experience terrible things either, because, you know, they're my precious angels too for 1 year. And I think that that is something that's really hard for them in first grade, is kind of that sense of self that's very strongly developing since kindergarten, and the idea of making your own choices, and, you know, what happens when I make this choice versus when I make this choice, and thinking through the consequences of that, and not being told exactly what to do, but kind of really thinking through things themselves and making those independent decisions. Also, you know, let them pack their own backpack in the morning,
and know what's in the backpack.
Be in charge of their own lunchbox, making it into the backpack and that kind of stuff. I mean, they make lots and lots of choices throughout the school day, and they are responsible for many things within the classroom, which sometimes you hear yourself speak as a teacher, and you're just like, I really getting on this kid who's 6 years old about being responsible and making good choices? But it kind of does come down to that, because in the end, we want them to be productive humans, and part of being a productive human is learning how to make good choices for yourself. So that's one of the things that I think is really important.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mel, do you want to go next?
Sure. So I am Mel Musgrove. This is my 9th year teaching. I have always taught in low-income schools. Which, to piggyback off of what Jordan said, we work at the same school. We were talking today that sometimes what we wish our parents knew, luckily, are not things that you guys have to worry about. But one thing that I could share across both statuses is that it's okay to be bad. Like, it's okay to suck at division. I teach 5th grade. So all of a sudden, it's no longer 1 or 2 digit numbers, it's 3 digit numbers. And now there's a fraction, and now there's a decimal. And so my kids come to me, and they are mad at me, and they hate me, and they hate division. And I
get to tell them,
it's okay. It's okay to suck. It's okay to be bad at this. Where it's not okay is if you choose to continue to be bad at this. Like, I'm sure either you guys or your parents or someone has said, I was never good at math, and I was never good, and I'm never good at math. And I really strongly believe that that was a choice that you made. At one point in time, you stopped being good at math, and then they decided, not good at math anymore. And that's what our children are hearing these days. Well, I'm not good at basketball. I'm not good at track. I'm not good at math. I'm not good at reading. And they decide that's the badge they wear. And as a fifth grade teacher in a lot of schools, that's when the grades start being compartmentalized. So they're only going to come to me for math. They're only going to go to someone else for ELA, for English Language Arts. And so preparing them for middle school, I don't want them to go in with that fear of like, oh, well, I love Miss Musgrove because she teaches math, but I hate Miss Villasenor because she teaches reading. Like, no one, unless you have some sort of chemical or mental whatever, is really bad at math. Like, it may be extra hard for you, but it doesn't mean that you're bad at it. And that's something that I talk with both my parents and my students. And it's a very honest conversation we have about every October when division comes along. Like, y'all are going to hate me. You're going to hate your day. And I'm going to hate it too, and that's fine. We can all hate it together. But be honest about hating it. And that's another thing too. Like, sit there and suck at it in silence. Because if you look busy, I'm going to assume that you're busy. And so I'm not going to say anything to you about it. So be honest. Talk to me about your struggles. And I think that bleeds into everything else. If your kids are honest with you about what they're bad at, tell them that you are also bad at it. That's fine. My mom will tell you till she's blue in the face she sucks at math. She probably already has to most of you in this room. But it's something that we work through together, and it becomes a healing moment for the two of you.
I feel like y'all probably have a clarifying question or like, what? But what about this case, Miss Mal? Anybody have like, I'm struggling with this at home, or I do that?
Well, I think what you're getting at is, like, you might not be fixing good, but you're not, it doesn't click easily
right.
Like other things. So I guess the next step would be, well, you know, they need extra help, like, get the, you know, have the parent contact you, be like, we're really struggling, is there something I can do with him or her later, or work out a plan. See, and I think that's maybe what you're getting at, because some parents are like, yeah, I'm not good at math either, like, so I'm not going to do anything about it, and so I guess they're just mad about, you know, they're
right.
Bad at math too, and so I think that's what happens sometimes these days too.
And I think it's easier with math. I've always
math
only
math.
Taught math. So just in the schools that I've been in, they've always been compartmentalized where I'm only teaching math. So that's kind of where my strength and where my talking points come from. But also, math is not the same as how we learned it. Like, when I made the jump from teaching second grade to teaching fifth grade, I had to teach myself how to teach fifth grade math. And I had a college degree. And I was like, this is super embarrassing. But it's not the same. It's not the same math that it was when we took it. And so a lot of it comes from that, too. Like, I can teach my kid how to multiply 365 times 12. But it's not how their teachers are teaching them how to multiply those numbers. It's not, the homework that's coming home isn't what you probably recognize, because it wasn't what I recognized when I moved from second to fifth. And so it is, it's something that you just need to, sometimes just need to say, I don't get it. This doesn't make sense to me, it doesn't click, somebody next to me is better, or your dad's better, or your mom's better, or wait till your brother comes home. Obviously, I had to wait till Graham came home every single night telling my mom. Like, so you're right. It's okay to say, I don't get it. It's okay to say that this doesn't make any sense, because your kids are looking at you in the same way that our children are looking at us. And I have found it's easier for my children to say, I don't understand this, Miss Musgrove, when I can also say, holding the dry erase marker, oh, I made a mistake. Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't understand this either. So let's look at it a different way and figure it out. That's so powerful.
Yes, ma'am.
More than they should be, and try to seek help, because I've had a lot of people say you have to constantly be advocating for your kids. Like, if they're, you're going to be the one to recognize, or do the teachers let you know, or is that just something you're like, oh, my child's making all D's? You know, is there something that needs to be getting intervened here?
You could probably speak to the lowers, because I peak at second grade. But I think
just keeping
will.
The communication line between mm-hmm. you and the teacher is the best way to ensure that. I mean, me personally don't get upset if a parent comes and says, what's my child, you know, how are they doing, what's going on with this child? So just keeping the communication open, I think, is definitely the way to go. And if you feel like your child is, you know, behind in this or what, bringing it to the teacher's attention so that they can start with some accommodations, which is the first step to kind of just helping them to figure out what is it that's making them struggle with this subject. Is it that they're not understanding the directions? Is it that they need a task to know, like, exactly what they're supposed to do? They're missing the whole of it, or whatever it might be. But sometimes you hear it more at home. Your kid could come home and say, I'm really frustrated. I don't understand what Ms. Sternberg is saying, these instructions, and I'm just following what the other kids are doing. So sometimes you hear a different story, and that's definitely something you should communicate with the teacher.
And I think she said the word accommodations. Don't be afraid of accommodations. Mm-mm. Like, if someone comes to you and says, your child needs accommodations, or we want to suggest mm-hmm. your child buzz. Take this test. I know. For how many years is this buzzword? Like, I don't want my kid in special ed. I don't want my kid in accommodations.
Labeled, yeah.
I don't want my kids getting labeled. Mm-hmm. I don't want anything. I don't want my kid carrying that folder from class to class.
Yeah.
But, like, it's 2020. Every kid has a folder. Like, and I think all of us can speak to, we've had at least one kid whose parents denied services, mm-hmm. and that kid is floundering because their parents were too selfish, too whatever, too uneducated.
And it's
in
unnecessary.
The world,
like, they don't have to be. They don't have to be floundering. Like, we have things in place that could be helping them, and because mm-hmm. like of people's pride, or they like because it has like a stigma about
common
it.
Common misconceptions.
Yeah, exactly. Because you aren't aware of what that means, really. Then the kid is really the one that, like...
Will you introduce yourself and tell us who you are?
I'm Amanda Villasenor. I have taught second for 3 years. This is my fourth year teaching, so second for 3 years, and I've just made the jump to fifth grade also. Mel teaches math and science, right, and I teach all of them, so I'm self-contained, which means I have my babies all day long, every day, 5 days a week. So... we're also an IB school,
oh,
so
yay.
Like it makes it a little different. So we compare notes a lot of the time, and sometimes they're the same, sometimes they're different. So was that it?
Yeah, that's okay. Great. But tell us your wisdom. What's the thing you wish we knew?
Sorry to keep like broken recording about this, but
these
like
are good. These
I've had it explained to me as productive struggle. So like when they can't do their homework, or they can't. They don't understand division, or they don't understand what that word is. Like, let them figure it out. Okay, you don't understand. How can you help yourself? You can sound out that letter. You know what R says. What does R say? Let's start there and then do it that way. So kind of having them problem solve, having them solve their own problems. And then another thing that we say, like when they, I'm not good at math, I'm not good at division. You're not good at division yet. You're not good at reading yet. What can we do to get you there? What is your job? What's your responsibility in order to get yourself where you need to be, where you like can succeed more, I guess. So, yeah.
Thank you.
One more thing. My biggest thing that I do at Sunday school here and everywhere, I think talking to kids, getting kids to talk is very important. And lots of times they need help in figuring out how to talk to people. And so at my classroom and at Sunday school here in kindergarten, we always talk about, like, a good thing that's happened. Some weeks we'll share something good that happened this week, and people are like, I had a play date or whatever it might be. And then some days we talk about something that was hard that week, like maybe we got a bad grade or whatever it is. But I think that's a really easy thing that you can implement at your house, in the car, anywhere, just getting kids to talk about something from their day. Like, was it good? But give them guiding questions, like, tell me one awesome thing you did with your friends today. Because if you just say, what'd you do at school? Nothing. Always, it's going to be nothing. Or, what did you like today? I liked PE. So, like, giving them more in-depth questions that is, like, makes them give you an answer is a really good way to just kind of get them talking about their day and realize that you do care. They don't have to, you know, just say nothing all the time.
Great. Awesome. Lauren, was your hand up earlier?
I just wanted to ask, do you have any resources for parents who don't understand how you teach the new math?
We'll talk.
Absolutely. I will get them to you. Also, I can tell you right now, if it is, if it's fractions, you have to teach them the way the school is teaching them, unfortunately. Like, if it's fractions, you have to, unfortunately, teach it the way the school is teaching it, because that's how your child is going to be tested.
And it matters.
So like, your child will need to recognize that's what a fraction looks like. However, when it comes to multiplication, when it comes to division of almost every single other thing, as long as your child gets the right answer, it doesn't particularly matter. But yes, yes.
We came from a school where they would teach them three different ways.
Mm-hmm. And hope while something
it was
stuck.
Good, like, if one would really click, they'd make them do it all three ways. And I'm like, but this one's really
right. Yes. Yeah, so there are certain things that, because of the test, the children need to know. Do I agree with those? No, not all the time. But it is something that I also just tell my children, you just have to memorize it. You just have to know what this means. You just have to do this. But most things, as long as they get the right answer.
Okay, speaking of tests, will you help all of us know what are the grades, what are the tests, what are the, I mean, age grades, not ABC, but like fourth grade. Like, mm-hmm. what are the things that we should freak out and worry about, and which ones shouldn't? Like, when my girls hit fourth grade, I was told, like, everything depends on fourth grade. The college they get into goes all the way back to fourth grade, because their little test that they take at the end of the year determine what middle school they're going to get into, and then mm-hmm. that determines what high school and what programs they're going to get into, which we all know determines everything. Like, it was so much pressure. Do y'all feel any of that at any level?
No. Claire. Okay. Jack is two. One. He's so young.
Yes, yes. So if you don't know yet, and you might, please tell us the answer.
I bought really. It.
Right. Yeah. Right.
You're on the other side, Jen. You're on the other side. Yeah.
You've done it.
It's a little bit of a leading question, but please help us. Yeah.
So your children, you probably already know this, will take a STAR test, which I think is what we're talking about.
Yes.
TOS, TAX, STAR. They're all the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They will take a STAR test in third grade. That'll be the first one. They take math and reading in third grade. And that is going to be brutal for them because it's the first one they have taken. But the third grade teachers know that, and they get started in August getting your little cherubs ready to take a standardized test. In fourth grade, they take reading, writing, and math, and writing.
Yes.
Never taught fourth grade. and then in fifth grade is the biggest ones. In fifth grade, they take reading and math a month earlier than anyone else does. Because fifth grade and eighth grade are promotion grades. So if you do not pass in fifth grade, you do not get to go to middle school. If you do not pass in eighth grade, you do not get to go to high school. So that means fifth graders and eighth graders take the STAR test a month earlier than everyone else.
So they can have some other chances if they fail it.
Yes, mm-hmm. because at least in fifth grade, the child gets three chances to take the STAR test.
Mm-hmm. In fifth.
In fifth grade.
Yeah, but like later, it's later like on later, when the rest of the grades take.
Not a promotion standard.
Right, when everybody else takes the STAR, mm-hmm. they take that one.
Yeah, so if your child fails math or reading the first time, they will automatically be signed up for summer school, and they will automatically have to take it the STAR test a second time, which is in May when third and fourth grade takes their STAR test. If they fail it a second time, which is not terribly likely, but it is likely, there will be a, this might be way too much information, but there is what's called a grade placement committee. It's your students' teachers, it's leadership from the school, it's anyone who has come in contact with your students or with your child. So if your child is in special ed, one of their representatives will come. If your child is in speech, that person will probably come. And they will discuss and say, is this child just kind of a poor test taker? And they still deserve to get to go to sixth grade. That was terrible. Sorry. Then your child will get to go to sixth grade. Which it happens most often. It's that these children have been doing relatively well the entire year, and then for whatever reason, the nerves got the best of them. I had a girl throw up one year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she just made herself so sick, she puked, and she left. And, like, I had to throw the test away. Like, so these things happen. But fifth grade and eighth grade.
Mm-hmm. No.
No, no. No. No, no,
I think we can all agree that it shouldn't happen.
It should not happen. But also your children's teachers are getting them incredibly ready. Like, the two of us in fifth grade have been doing it for months now. Like, getting your child ready for the rigor that is the STAR test.
What is, like, maybe think about this room so it's not extreme, but what, anybody want to answer what parents are doing that you wish we wouldn't do?
And I mean, make excuses for their kid. It's a hard one, because I mean, I'm a mom, I do the same thing. But, like, you know, we make excuses for them. Like, when a teacher calls and says, my kid was yelling at this kid on the playground or whatever it might be, we're like, oh, well, they just, you know, well, we're just going to make up something. We get defensive, right? It's our instinct. We're like, no. But just like we were saying earlier, like, you know, we have to let them be responsible for their choices that they made. So if they chose to do that, then we need to say, okay, well, what's the consequence? And live up to it. So I think that's a big one. It's a hard one, though.
I agree.
Yeah. Y'all all agree?
Either with conferences, like meeting with your teacher, you should all meet with your teacher at the beginning of the year, not just when there's a problem. Meet with them, like, know them.
You can request a conference
anytime. They're with your kids all the time. All the time. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, not every week. Like, don't go every week.
I feel weird if I like.
Right, exactly. If you have coffee, you come whenever you want.
That is a very good thing to do. But it's weird if you know this kid. I mean, you see them for 8 hours a day, every day of the week, except for Saturday and Sunday, and you're like, I don't have any clue who your parents are. I don't know their names. It's odd for me.
For big kids, like, it lets them know, like, my mom cares about my schooling, and she wants to talk to my teacher about my education. Like, she's valuing that, and she wants, like, so it's all three of us. Like, all three of, or four of us are in it together. We're all trying to pass the START test. We're all trying to go to middle school. We're all trying to do this together. So show up, and if you, like, don't not show up. Like, if you don't not show up, like, call. Like,
yeah.
Because our whole day, like, we've planned out this time for you.
I don't think y'all are doing that. Hopefully.
Yeah, don't do that.
Not standing up parent conferences. Don't do it.
My high school
yes, please.
You're in it. I have a parent-teacher conference tomorrow with my high schooler, and they said, we would like to meet with you. Ty's Mandarin teacher said, we'd like to meet with you and the counselor, and they suggested some kind of like at 2 in the afternoon. I said, no, I'd like to do it during Ty's community time so he can be there.
Mm-hmm.
And because, like, he's in high school. He's right. A sophomore.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm like, I don't know if somebody's calling me. You should be having a chat with him first. But I really felt like, okay, in high school is when we're turning it over to them. This is, I'm showing up because they asked me to, and we're going to have this Mandarin teacher all 4 years. We're in high school, so I need to have a good relationship with her. And in high school, we've got to start that transition. But it's, their grades are theirs, and they have to take some personal accountability. And I'm going to show up, but I can't change his study habits. I can't make sure he turns his homework in. It's up to him at the ripe age of 15 and a half. So that's my.
That's how it looks on the other end when what y'all are telling us.
Yeah.
Tell us about your hardest day or your best day as a teacher with our children.
I don't want to know about my heart.
It's a dark day. I don't know.
Like bathroom emergency, yes. Like just ruins the whole day.
Yes. I have to clean it up with that sawdust stuff.
Kitty litter.
It's bad. It gets so sticky. It's disgusting.
But I don't want to. Like, I don't want to be a part of any of that.
Yeah. Today I asked, why is this wet? Like, it's just dumb questions. Like, you don't want to know the answer. Yeah. Like, you don't want to know why it's wet.
You'll see one, like, trickle over there and look at it.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, no. Go away.
Sit down.
Yeah.
Best days are when kids get it and they are proud of themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The light bulbs go on.
Yeah.
Or they help somebody else do what you taught them.
I think some of my worst days were when I had a student with severe emotional disturbances and he couldn't, like, it was really bad. And I think one of the things that I would want y'all to know from that experience is that it's important for you to talk to your kid about maybe what other kids are going through and help them understand that, you know, those outbursts are not your fault. They're not really sometimes the kid's fault. It's something that, you know, we have to embrace our differences. It's hard because as teachers, we can't really, like, lay it all out on the table for the rest of the class if you have a group like that. So maybe just kind of helping them cope and understand, because it can be very traumatizing for the other children in the class as well as for me and for the child who's struggling. So if that is a situation in your child's class, maybe just see if they need to talk to a counselor. Mm. Sometimes that's necessary. I wish that I could have been more supportive of my other students when all of this was happening. But there are laws in place where I cannot be as... and the word escaped me.
Like open?
As open as I would want to, yeah. So just stay aware of things like that, because it happens all the time. It happens in really great schools. It happens in really terrible schools. It happens in private school and in public school. It happens everywhere. Kids are really, really faced with a lot of challenges and stresses these days, and it comes out in ugly ways sometimes. So, yeah.
I think that also goes on. Talking to your kids about students with disabilities is really important. Mm-hmm. They're in... I guarantee you, in every single public class that you have, there's going to be at least one kid that has ADHD or autism or something. And being open and honest with your kids that say, like, hey, they're really cool friends, but sometimes they get upset about things, or sometimes they are jumping up and down in their chair when we're supposed to be sitting down. And instead of saying, hey, sit down, or hey, they're not listening, you know, you just already understand that that kid needs something different. So just being open and honest with them and at the go, you know, when they go to school. So that they can be loving and accepting, because it's not the case for all kids.
Mm-hmm. I think when you do talk to your kids about it, because they might react like a certain way and you maybe find out about it, talk to them, it's like night and day the next day. They'll be like, oh, that's what mom was talking about.
And yeah.
Sit here and mm-hmm. ignore it or whatever. You know what I
right.
mean? Like,
yeah. Maybe. And it kind of levels the playing field a little bit, because like I had a child last year who slept all the time in class. And I would get onto other kids who were sleeping. And I didn't get onto that one student. We'll call him Mel. I didn't get onto Mel, who was sleeping in my class all day, because I had an open CPS case with Mel's family. Because Mel's parents worked at night so they could take him to school and pick him up from school. So when Mel, who was 10, got home from school, he was handed his 2-year-old sister, and he was mom and dad for the remainder of the evening. So Mel couldn't go to sleep, Mel couldn't do his homework, so Mel was tired at school. So I started having kids come to me say, well, why do I get in trouble when I sleep? Why do I get a note home when I sleep during class and Mel gets to sleep during class all the time? And like Jordan mentioned, I can't say, oh, because Mel, you know, we're working with CPS right now with Mel's parents, mm-hmm. you know. And that's something that you as parents can be more open about. We can't do that. Legally, we are not allowed to say, oh, well, this child has this disability, this child has this going on. So
we
kind of have to tread this line of saying, well, he's different. I'm sure you all had a kid go, well, I'm different, or why are they different? And that's not a good enough answer, but that's all that we can say. And I think that was some of the hardest days. Like, mm-hmm. I went on a field trip. My co-teacher lost a child in NASA, and we had to go back and find the child. We get back at school. CPS is waiting for me in the front office. I go talk to CPS. I come back to my room. CPS comes and gets Mel from my classroom, takes Mel to the front office, talks to Mel about his parents. Mel has to say, my parents lied. My parents do this. My parents do this. And then Mel has to come back to class.
Mm-hmm.
And Mel has to be a fifth grader for the remainder of the day.
And then divide fractions.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then divide fractions.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And then divide
exact
fractions.
Way.
And so I think that kind of loops in, like, have patience with your teachers. Like, you know, everybody complains about the note that's misspelled. Everybody complains about this, you know, like, it's going to happen. Like, your teacher probably had to call CPS.
Like a teacher note that's misspelled? Mm-hmm. People are complaining about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, well, I
just think about those days when your kid gets on your nerves after just two kids at home. Yeah. Think about us with 20 kids 25.
Yeah.
All day long.
Yeah. Like, if you emailed me at 3 p.m., I probably won't respond until at least the next day, the day after that, because I probably talked to CPS. Or, you know, she had a transformer blow because a squirrel got on it. Like, there are just things
real
that,
that happened,
you know,
yesterday.
Well, we're just human. Like, everybody's a human.
JT, what did you want to say? And I hope it includes helping us, because they know who the children are in the classroom and what they're dealing with, but a lot of us don't know all the kids in our, and so, like, how do we know how to navigate these amazing conversations?
Two things. One, they all talked about letting your kids suck or do bad.
Yeah.
We call that a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset. And so we want our kids to be able to grow, even at something they're not good at, to get better. And the second is with the people with disabilities. I talk with my kids about seeing disabilities, and we go through activities, and I like put socks on their hands. Now play cards with socks on your hands. It's really hard to do. And that's, sometimes people are physically disabled, but they're seeing, and there's unseen disabilities. When I started talking about unseen disabilities, it opened up the door to talk to them a lot more about things that you can't see. Like, you know somebody's blind because they have the glasses and the dog or whatever, or you know someone's in a wheelchair, you can see it. And so talking to them about the unseen disabilities really helps them to open up a little bit and say, oh, there's maybe things I don't know and don't understand.
So I'm just having that conversation with my children about life in general, which then may, like, give them the opportunity to say, well, this is what's happening with Mel in class. I wonder if Mel has an unseen disability. Yeah. That's awesome.
Because if your child can come to us, and your child can say, hey, I talked to my parents about this, and that's a little bit easier for us to manage. Mm-hmm. We still can't go into detail with your child. But it does open up, and it kind of, one thing that at least we work on is that different is okay, and that we still talk about differences. Mm-hmm. Like, for a while, you didn't talk about differences. Mm-hmm. And so you didn't talk about what color their skin was, and you didn't talk about how much money they made, and you didn't talk about the neighborhood they lived in. But those are what makes those people those people. And so Mel is Mel because of what Mel does when he goes home. And that matters to Mel, and he wants to talk about that. And so we didn't want to talk about it because we thought it bothered him, or we thought he was embarrassed about it. But that's who he was. So talk to your kids about it. Open up this line of communication of, yes, that kid has autism. And maybe, you know, you were taught not to stare at them, but that doesn't mean don't look at them. Mm. Like, not staring and not looking are two very different things to a child.
Right. Well, and also there are lots of great literature resources out there for understanding disabilities.
You can send us a list, I'll share
it. I sure will.
Perfect.
Just like kind of helping your kid get into the mindset of, like, maybe what is different about this new friend that I have in my class, and, you know, how can I relate more easily to the plight.
I have kind of a related question, cause, like, especially like Margaret, when you were saying don't make excuses for your kids. So I'm thinking through conversations I've had with my kids where, like, a teacher will send a note home saying there was this problem, like, someone, you know, Baby Jane talked to the entire day or whatever.
Not that that
no.
ever.
No. Never. No.
I would say to her, like, Phoebe, what was going on? Why were you having a hard time listening to the teacher? It's never like, oh, I just didn't care to listen to the teacher. It's like, well, so-and-so was also talking, and it wasn't my fault because the guy was washing the windows on the outside.
The squirrel blew up. The squirrel blew up, yeah.
Take responsibility for herself. So we try to have these conversations with her, like, you know, other kid was talking, and the teacher didn't get on her or whatever,
right.
And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not so-and-so's mom. You're going to have to leave that up to the teacher. How do you help your kid to have these?
Oh, that's really hard.
Because, I mean, I don't want to make excuses for them. I don't want them making excuses for themselves. I don't always know how to navigate, like.
Yeah, that is really hard. I'm not going to lie. There's no right answer for that one. My thing would be, like, to say, well, Phoebe, if that kid next to you is really bothering you, then why don't you ask the teacher if you can switch seats? So, like, she takes the responsibility of, this, if I'm going to blame this kid for getting me in trouble, well, then I'm going to fix the problem and ask to be moved. So some of those kind of things, like giving them the tools to try and solve that problem on their own, you know? We can still help them figure out how to fix it. But I would think some of those things were like, you know, if there's a spot that's really distracting or some, you know, so, someone's outside the window making big noises, we'll say, can I sit on the other side of the room? That seems to be a big distraction to me or something.
Like the favorite thing we always said in our house was, how do you fix that problem? How can you fix that problem? Is there a way for you to fix that problem?
That's a good question. Mm-hmm. Because
can you fix that problem? How would you fix that problem?
So lots of times the kids will be like, can you just email my teacher and tell them that da 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 is going on? Well, so like we've always been said to told to tell the kids, you go talk to your teacher. You go talk to them, or you can write them a letter if you're too nervous to go and talk to them. Mm-hmm. But you figure out how to get your concern to the teacher. And, I mean, sometimes you as a parent can say, I'll go with you. I'll stand right next to you. I'll do everything you want, but you need to use your words.
But
to
try first and then let me know how it goes.
Exactly.
And to help you.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, like, brainstorm with them. Come up with different ideas on what we could do to make it better for me. I mean, for them.
Any kind of distraction, we'd always start with, like, ask them, Maddox, do you know your teacher wants? Like, when I get in trouble for whatever all the time, and we'd start with, do you know what their expectations are? What are they wanting to do? And if you can't explain that, then you need to have a conversation with your teacher and ask them what they want you to do.
Yeah.
What did you want to say, Jordan?
I think a lot of the time with those first, second kindergartners, kids who are still kind of understanding the realm of rules, is helping them understand and identify when they make a mistake. Like, my mantra in my classroom is, it's fine to make mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. You just have to fix it. You can't just keep making the same mistakes. You have to try and fix it. So helping her identify, you know, I did do something wrong. And, yes, this other person was doing it, but it was me too, and I made a mistake, and I was talking, I shouldn't have been doing that. So next time, here's how I'm going to fix it. Kind of like what you were saying, Margaret. It's just, I think that identifying that, oh, yeah, I did something wrong, is really also powerful for them to recognize maybe next time something like that happens.
We're not perfect, right?
Right.
So don't expect your kids to be perfect all day long. I mean, it's a long day. If they come home with this thing that says, you did whatever I was talking in class, well, talk to them about it, but then it doesn't have to be like a into the world consequence.
Like, never talk again, ever. They can talk. It's
I'm not going to lie. How many of y'all in business meetings are talking to the person next to you?
Oh,
I mean, come
sure.
on.
I just did it right now.
So just remember that, too.
A teacher told me, I said, oh, well, Ty's going to have extra consequences about that or something like that. And she said, you know what? Let our school consequences be our school consequences.
I say that a lot.
Punish them again.
Mm. Right.
I say that a lot to my parents. Mm-hmm. I say, we typically have a punishment at school. Like, you know, if it's timeout or whatever it might be. Like, typically we have addressed the behavior. So when they get home, it's for y'all to talk about. And if it was a really big thing, I mean, obviously, you know, you can address it. But just little things, they've already been, had that consequence. Mm-hmm. Usually a talking to and them just knowing that you're disappointed in that. Mm-hmm. Is a consequence in
and
itself.
You're aware of it.
And you're aware of it.
So if you have a child that doesn't seem to care, no, seriously, because
that
I
was me.
You have the conversation with the teacher, like, we address it in class, and you don't need to worry about it. But I'm like, every week, there's like three or four notes about all the time she's talking that she's not supposed to be. And I'm like,
well, then maybe you reverse it on her and say, next week, Phoebe, if you don't get any report notes home to me saying that you're talking in class, then we'll go on a special date or something.
Yeah,
reverse it on her.
You know, it does.
Just like, bummer, I guess I don't get any
notes. It's like, I never want to say that. Okay, I'm glad Melinda left.
I know, it's so
good
that she's not here.
So what do you do when you have one who's like, something wrong, and then there's the one where he just hasn't gotten it yet that you have to put in effort.
Yeah.
And he's smart. Like, you know, he's not, I mean, everyone knows what I'm talking about, but he, you know, let's
call him Mel.
He gets Mel 2.0. No, but see, and he gets it. Right? It's just, I worry because we're in fourth grade, so we're getting closer to middle school where homework and doing your own, I'm like, do your homework, and he'll do it, and I don't hover, but if he asks me for help, I'll go and help, but just the point of being more, I just see it just totally go
terms of independence or in terms of drive?
Like he doesn't want to?
He's not that he doesn't want to. It's just like, lazy.
It just doesn't matter. La, la, la. He doesn't see how any of it matters.
Yeah.
It's just, I've read it, I understand it, move on. And
you're just, so and do I just leave that?
Sometimes you're 30 before you realize that you have to, like, try and do stuff and have drive.
Do what now? What'd you say?
It might be totally strange. It might be a long time before he figures that out. And it's okay. I turned out great. Like, I'm going to get a PhD. No, it's going to be fine.
Totally. But there comes to a... I just don't want it to... I guess it just may have to happen. It might just have to be something big where, you know, well, he didn't bring home this, and so... You know, or bring home that was something that's big, and then you'd be like, eh,
he might have to fail a little bit.
That's what I
natural
mean, that's
consequences.
What I
yeah.
I mean, I don't mind doing reminders. I don't do them. I don't like do it. But I don't mind saying like, you know, like he has to have a list in the morning. He has to have done in the morning.
I mean, I feel harsh saying that now, but it's better for him to fail and learn that lesson now than when he's in college or when he's out of college and in a real job. And, like, that's harder to do.
I need to step in and be like, this is an average, and it's going down into a well now. Like, but I'm still going to let you do it on your own. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
Like, at what point do you say this is unacceptable? I guess you just start, like, I don't know, maybe this is more than I mean, y'all are all, most of them are all parents, but I don't know. I
think it'll hit next year. A lot of it will hit next year because they're going to start looking at middle school. And they're going to start listening and hearing about middle school, and they're going to start finally paying attention to middle schoolers. Like, I don't know that he could point out anywhere at church. Maybe he could. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, probably. I don't
but
know
I'm betting that starting next year, he's going to start realizing who they are.
Yeah.
And he's going to start being like, oh, I want to do that. Oh, I want to do that. Because he's still kind of the big man on campus right now because he's in fourth grade, and fourth grade's super cool. Everybody wants to be in fourth grade, and it's super hard, and yada, yada, yada. So I do think some of that professionally will hit him next year.
I guess if she had a problem, she'd be calling me.
Without
doubt.
Y'all
are amazing and wonderful, and on behalf of all of us and all of your parents, of your cherubs and angels that you deal with every day, thank you for the years and the love and all of the amazingness.